tuning in to the Attack and Release Show. My name is Matt, and I'm joined by my good friend from Nashville, Sam Moses.
Hello.
On today's episode, we are going to be doing a follow-up on, I believe, episode 14 on room acoustics and monitoring. We had a bunch of people write in and say, what about sonar works? What about room calibration equipment? What about all of this stuff? So we decided that around 20,000 follow or 20,000 downloads, which we hit back in September, that, hey, why don't we do a special episode? And we were going to do that. And we were going to try to team up with SonarWorks and do something to help promo them right before Black Friday. But this obviously isn't airing before Black Friday, so something went awry. This actually is going to be our season finale. And if you're listening to this, it should be right around Christmas time.
Santa.
So yeah. Spoilers. This is gonna be a good episode.
It's gonna be great.
All right, Sam. The last dive of the year.
The last dive of the year. Here I go.
The final dive.
Off the deep end here. Head first.
We need
into sonar works.
You're kinda king of the sound effects. Like we need like
what do you
a
want
dive.
This time? A sploosh?
No, not like a sploosh, like a, I don't know, you know, like the, like you hear in
like submarine
movies
dive.
When they're about to dive, yeah.
All right, I will just.
And there's like a captain in the back yelling, dive!
I will go find a submarine and record it later this week.
Perfect.
Be a challenge.
Perfect. Let's dive into this one.
All right, here we go. Sonar works. I'm going to start.
Do it.
Okay, so Matt and I both got sent to us the RTA microphone from SonarWorks, as well as their software for the headphone calibrations and the room, what do they call it specifically? I can't remember. Basically the room emulator that's supposed to fix any issues within your room. And for those that are listening that have no idea what SonarWorks is at all, it's basically a software that runs either in your DAW or they have a version that runs basically behind always in your computer that is running in a Q curve with supposedly maybe some phase fixing as well. I'm not sure about that after doing that, but we'll talk about that later. And it's supposed to solve any issues if you have too much low end or too much top end or dips or nodes or whatever. You go through this process that I'll talk about, and then it supposedly makes your room perfectly flat, or what they call flat. So my experience with it was they sent us the stuff very quickly, and it was great. And I was excited to test it out. I've been reading all over the Facebook forums about people pretty much either loving it or absolutely hating it. And I was extremely skeptical to begin with, mainly because I thought if this thing is just throwing an EQ over my my speakers or what I'm hearing, it's going to just be looping the problems that still may be in the room. So for a quick example, if you happen to have like a 6 dB boost at 50 hertz or 100 hertz because you're in a small room, which is very common to have some buildup there, this would then subtract that amount, and then it would spit it out. You know, you'd hear it now with that correction on. But then my thought was, well, it's just spitting it out into the room again, which is just going to add that little bump again. So it's a cycle that never ends of incorrect hearing. So that was one of my big skepticisms. So I'll just kind of explain what it is. You get the microphone, you get the software, you run some test tones, essentially, for anyone that's ever done any sort of speaker setup or whatever. It's basically low end to top end, like a sine
it's
wave.
A sweep.
Yeah, sweep. Thank you, Matt.
I have another interruption here soon after this
excellent.
Interruption.
Excellent. And it measures where your speakers are at, you know, the distance between them, the distance between them and your ears or your listening spot. And then you go through this painful process of 37 different points of measurement while you're holding the microphone, and you cannot use a stand. You have to hold it with one hand, supposedly, which is what I ended up having to do. I tried to trick it using a stand, and it honestly did not work. Somehow it knew. But you hold it with a hand, and it sends out these chirpy sounds from your speakers 37 different times to 37 different spots within your room, and you have to hold the microphone there while it's just going chirp, 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 chirp.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I had to listen to it for freaking 1 hour when it said it took 20 minutes. And I eventually got smart and put earplugs in, so I didn't have to hear it anymore. It was so annoying.
Sam's living in 3018.
There you go.
2018.
Yeah. If you're going to do it, put earplugs in from the start. And then after you're done with 37 different points, it spits out an EQ curve. It shows you what, you know, your room looks like. And then it shows you what it's going to do. And you hit a button, and then all your room problems and mix problems and mastering problems are solved. You're officially a professional after that.
Before you get into your results.
That was it, Matt. That was what I did. What did you do?
one second. So let me kind of jump back a little bit.
Jump back.
So what we were talking with SonarWorks about is, hey, it'd be great if we could do this follow-up for our listeners, because so many people reached out and said, you in your room acoustics and monitoring setup episode, you didn't talk about this. And that was actually another episode we had a lot of people reach out and say, what about this and what about this and what about this? And in an hour, you can't necessarily cover like theory on room acoustics and monitoring, nor would I ever go out of my way to boast that I could ever teach a lesson on that. It was just an episode of us talking about what we knew. And as we figure out more and learn more, and I mean, Sam just did something awesome with his room, he'll probably tell you about, we'll update everybody. So, we indulged in that and said, hey, it would be really cool if we could do an episode. And we were assigned, I don't know if it was a salesperson or someone in their marketing team or whatnot, I won't say their name, and said, hey, it'd be really cool if we could try out this software, see what all the hype's about, and then in about a month after using it, like honestly on clients' work, see what we think, and if you could provide a tech or somebody from PR or whatnot to speak on behalf of your company, I think this would be a great like Q&A session, whether our findings are positive or negative. And they agreed, as Sam said, they sent us the RTAs and everything, and they gave us all the software download codes. And it was funny because I was very impatient and I did not wait for my RTA to arrive. And I had a DBX RTA. And so I did my first calibration on my own RTA. And I mean, even when I got theirs, it was literally the exact same curve. So, I mean, it's just an old style Behringer RTA. I mean, my Velodyne subwoofer, it literally has the exact same RTA that came in their box. So just different cabling to connect it. So what did I think? I did the room setup 3 times. So for those of you playing the home game, 37 calibration points multiplied by 3 is 111 measurements. And I probably did about 2.5 hours worth of measuring. It doesn't necessarily get easier or like more intuitive the more that you do it. And I wanted to like kind of put it through its paces, like do it without my subwoofer engaged, do it with my subwoofer engaged. I know that in my room there are some modes, and I know exactly where they are, and I tend to not touch them, and I try to treat for them, but when I'm mastering, I tend to not touch them. They're not that crazy. And in general, while my room is not completely flat, it does translate really well. And that's kind of the point, is you're not necessarily, when you're mastering, you're not trying to get, like, well, it is good to have a room that is acoustically flat, and Sam can speak on that. So long as what you are doing translates well out of your room, and you're not fatiguing the hell out of yourself trying to get to that point, and it is a superior product to what was given in the mixes, it is a vast improvement over the what the mixes were, then I'd say so long as it translates, you're good.
Right.
So it said that, so do you want to get to your results and then I'll get to my results, or we can,
why don't you go about this? Just share with everybody your results first.
So my results were a touch weird. I'd be curious to see, what other people have who use subwoofers.
Yeah.
Subwoofers that are in line with their monitoring, i.e. You head out of your monitor controller or converter into the subwoofer, and then you line into an amp or into your speakers, or then from the amp to the to your monitors. I would be curious just like what you are getting. So with my Velodyne, whenever I install it, and anytime I change something large in my room, so I got, when I got my new desk, you know, as new as eBay is, I, like a massive piece of furniture, I will retune the low end of my room, which I can do with an RTA from my Velodyne. And it has an auto-tune thing, and it'll phase line everything, and it'll even do it through the monitoring, as in it will figure out the appropriate crossover for the monitoring, and then it'll set the crossover and then phase relationships per that. So, and it does it pretty quick, but I actually let it run for quite a while and made sure that it was like 100% that it was going to be good, like the way it is. So I have my subwoofer that is tuned to the room, and SonarWorks is like, no, we're actually going to take a 12 dB like cut out of your low end. And it was interesting. It was like right at 100 to right around 30. And I know I don't have that much excess of low end in my room. So it was just, that was kind of interesting. I agreed where it was, call it 300 hertz and up, which was maybe like, we're going to do a dB here or half a dB here or just like little tiny notches. I agree with that. But in terms of the large low end curves, I'm not necessarily buying it. And I don't really know why. So I'd really be curious to hear from other people who have subwoofers, who use this product, if they had similar results or what they thought. So I even like tried running it, unplugging my sub and then just running it through my main speakers. And it was just, it just never, at least the room calibration software never really sat right. And in a room where I felt really, really comfortable that my mix is already translated well. And I was like, okay, maybe this can be the final 10%. Maybe like maybe this will take me to like another level of being able to understand mixes so I can deliver an even better product. And it took me from a room that I felt incredibly comfortable in that translated well to a room that I did not understand. That a room that sounded phasey, that it translated well, but it kind of sounded dead. And I don't know why. And as much as I want to go back to what Sam was saying, perhaps it's taking any existing modes that you might have in the room, and you're not really treating for those modes. you're just kind of treating for the speakers in the room in that exact moment. But it's like, if anything changes, what's going to happen? And then you have the dreadful thing of, if I print a mix and accidentally leave, or if I print a master and accidentally leave Sonar Works on,
yes,
that gets pretty nightmarish too. So you, if you use this, please make sure that you do turn it off, that you right. disengage it
right.
before you print anything.
Yes. I made that error.
But the funny thing was, is that your client said, it sounds great, just a little bright.
Yep, that was it. That was the other funny part.
That was kind of weird.
I know. It made me feel a lot of different feelings.
So, in all candor, I used this software for probably about 3 weeks, on and off.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most annoying thing, in all honesty, was that, like, as soon as you log into your computer, it, like, grabs... like your audio card and just assumes that I want to use it immediately.
Yeah, and I couldn't and so find like, a spot to turn that off.
I did, and it was turning off the whole thing.
Ah.
But that was it. It was really annoying because I'd be like, why do I have no audio right now? And for some reason, it just wasn't patching through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what is like my chain right now? And I go and open up the sound card settings and everything and be like, oh... well, Sonarworks has everything. Mm-hmm. I don't have Sonarworks on. That's weird. And so I turned it off. I put it right back to, like, Thunderbolt out to my Hilo, and everything's perfect.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most annoying thing.
Yeah.
But, Sam, you used it up until recently, and today's date is November 14th. I'm going to go back in this. Yeah, so we initially started talking with them on September 6th.
Yeah.
And this is November 14th. And this episode, if I plan it correctly, I think it will air right around the end of December.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be December 19th, I think, is the date for this. So, happy almost Christmas.
Yes.
So, what did you think of the room calibration? You used it for, like... literally up until recently, even when
correct.
You got new monitoring and you had some interesting things going on in your room and you kept with it.
Yeah. So I used it for probably 2 straight months.
Wow.
And I used it on my Genelex. I used it with Genelex and the sub. And then I used it on the Barefoots in my room. And then... in the process of doing this, I ended up redoing my room because the Barefoots were just thumping out. I knew too much low end, and it wasn't tight enough, and it was decaying too much and reverberating.
Mm.
And I knew I wasn't taking advantage of basically the reason why you buy Barefoots, which is like you can get rid of a sub and have super tight, time-aligned low end, essentially, if you have...
And is that the case now?
Yeah, it's definitely the case now after I like basically doubled up some 703 and adjusted a cloud. And now the room without anything on it is like top to bottom within just a few dB. And it's pretty much the best you can do in life. Like... which was the goal.
That's pretty darn flat.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about all of this, the more I think about Sonarworks and this idea of flat, is that, you know, our ears don't hear flat. We don't hear flat. Like, we know, like, with the Luff system, you know, our ears perceive top end, you know, louder than low end energy. And so... you know, this idea of chasing a flat room or a flat sound, you know, if you've ever seen an actual flat mix or master, it actually is really sounds poor. You know, it's not enjoyable because usually it's a little bright and it feels thin because the low end energy isn't loud enough to make it feel like there's low end. The top end just trumps everything. Now, that doesn't mean you have to have loads of low end to make it feel like something, but I know, like, if I'm, you know, I just play around with people's mixes, you know, before I figure out what I want to do. But if, you know, I can make your mix flat, but you won't want that as a master, you know? And I think that's what a lot of people are like. I just want it flat and to translate. It's like, well, you don't understand how the world works, because there's not like a flat place in the world. You know, speakers are not flat. Even expensive speakers are not flat. And so anyway, that's a little tangent, but I tested it out. I think I ran it 4 different times with the SonarWorks testing. And I used it for mastering. I used it for mixing. I probably mixed 10 songs through it. I mixed with the headphone thing. I mastered, who knows, 40, 50 songs probably over the last couple of months with it.
So that's a solid test.
Yeah, I definitely put it through its paces. And I felt like it wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't enjoyable to work on at all. So, like, to me, people, you buy monitors to kind of, hopefully, you buy them because you like the way they sound, like the character they take on, is usually how kind of people pick out monitors. When they really sit in front of a bunch of them, they're always usually picking based on which ones they just like, you know, regardless. They think that means it's like translating the best. But it's really all personal preference, and that's fine. You know, you can sit in front of ATCs and PMCs and Barefoots, and they all sound completely different, yet they all yield pretty good results for most people. And even, you know, Pro Acts are great too. You know, I wanted to throw that in because I do actually like those. But basically, I feel like when I would flip the SonarWorks on, even with the linear phase on, which is supposed to prevent any phase shifting, it just felt like my speakers and my image totally got, I don't want to say flipped upside down because that's dramatic, but it felt like my speakers and my whole system got swapped out for something else that I didn't like. And maybe what I don't like is flat. And that's kind of been my big thought through these last 2 months, and that's why I brought up that little tangent before, is the SonarWorks correction is showing, you know, like almost a dead straight line. And I don't know now if that's really the goal, you know, if that should be the goal. And I don't know if flat actually translates the best. And so my thought about this has just been kind of, that's been rolling around my head of, well, when I'm working flat in a quote unquote, you know, with SonarWorks on, it says it's flat, it just doesn't feel like reality. It's almost like, you know, it's a simulator. I'm running an emulation, you know, in my computer to make my room sound like something it's not. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And that is fake. And I think my ears know it's fake. It can tell it's fake. And so when I'm mixing on it or mastering, it doesn't have the same emotion. And my body literally does not respond the same way when it's on and off. When I flip it off and start mixing, I'm like making moves and like feeling the song again. When I flip it on, it's like I feel like I'm in a laboratory. That's really how I felt. Like I felt like it was sterile. Like I was in a lab and I was going for perfection over like going for emotion and feeling, which I think is what music should be about, over trying to get something to be flat. So, you know, and this is just my opinion. This isn't really, SonarWorks could say, well, that's fine. We're not, you know, the product's not for you then. And that's fine. But as far as me using it, when I used it, did I get a bad result? I don't think I did. Now, with that being said, my room was already good and I was already making stuff I really liked, kind of like you were saying. Your stuff was translating. You liked it. Your clients like it. People pay you for it. So we can conclude that it's probably working on some level. And that's how, you know, with me, it's, I really didn't have any issues with my product, and the SonarWorks thing kind of showed a few little dips and bumps here and there that, you know, it was nice to see it. If anything, I think the biggest value it gave to me was seeing a nice measurement of my room and then potentially hearing it, what it would be like if it got corrected. So The interesting thing with that is, and this is kind of where I'm like skeptical of the whole thing, is during this process, like we said, I ran it with before I just redid my room a few weeks ago or this past week. And so we were able to look at what Sonar Works picked up versus what my buddy who does it, you know, like professionally with his the fuzz measure software and a couple different other softwares that are used, I'll say, by like trained acousticians, I guess, maybe. That's what he is. And so we were able to compare what he got versus the Sonar Works, which was actually very similar. So that was neat. Of like Sonar Works is measuring pretty close. It was a little more dramatic than my buddy's, what it pulled, you know, showed. But we had the luxury of then looking at what originally Sonar Works spit out and what his thing spit out, and then do corrections in the room, change some 703, add a cloud to fix those things. And then when we remeasured with my buddy's stuff, the room was, you know, pretty darn near flat. And we fixed the issues, quote unquote issues, that like Sonar Works and his software pulled up. But then when I redid with Sonar Works the next day with my room, it kind of picked up similar things. But then when I flipped on the software, it felt so dramatic again of like...
How weird.
It felt like it wasn't correcting a whole lot, but once again, like the whole image and everything shifted so strangely to where once again, it was like there's something happening beyond EQ, and I'm sure it's involving phase two, which is fine. But it just, once again, like I started working on it and I was like, this is not fun. And thankfully now, you know, I fixed my little three issues. And now I don't even use it anymore. Like, I won't be using it because I don't need to. But I don't even think I would be using it anymore because it's not fun to me. It just feels like when I would take it out after mixing, doing a full mix on it, it would translate, like, in a car well. You know, my clients liked it. And you know, just disclaimer, none of my clients knew I was using it, you know, compared to not using it, if it was on or off. But it just felt like my stuff when I work with Sonar Works off is more of the sound that's in my head, if that makes any sense. I think we all, well, all is a big word. I feel like most people have kind of, you know, we all hear music uniquely. And when, you know, you hear a song, Matt, and I hear a song, it could be the same mix. We would master it two different ways. And, you know, we've talked about this before.
We should do a shootout one day. That would be pretty interesting.
We should. And actually, I love that idea of, like, we should just...
It terrifies me.
Why? It doesn't matter. It's not a matter of... This is the thing, though. It's not a matter of better or worse, because people don't pay you for better or worse overall. They pay you for you, you know, and your experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, even a side-by-side... comparing masters, I don't always love, because it's like, you know, it's subjective. Like, if someone never would have heard both of them, they would have assumed the one was perfect, you know. And then if one's just a hair brighter, usually instantly people will be like, well, that one's better, just because of where, you know, loudness is perceived. But we should do like a just, it's more to me like I would love to know approach, like, what did you do, Matt, to get it to there? And what did I do? What did I hear? What did you hear? That should be an episode we do. Let's make a little note about
that. That would be
cool. Just to kind of get our in our heads a little more of how we master. Okay, we're going to do that sometime next year. Season two. Yeah. But I guess what I'm trying to say is like...
Season two finale.
There we go. A whole year from now. We'll do
good.
That one.
It gives me time to get better.
Yeah, it gives me time to get better too then.
That would be episode 52.
That's incredible.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, I just want to kind of summarize, like, I feel like the measurements SonarWorks did, you know, was accurate. I was able to A/B it against some professional software, you know, that's used by acousticians, and it was a similar result. So I want to give them an A for that. But then the way it was fixed just felt so unnatural. And so for that, I give it a F, I guess, a failure. You know, like, I'm not going to use it. And I don't feel like it's improving my end goal or what I'm trying to create and make things sound like. And it really took the fun to me out of working on music because it was so sterile sounding, and the imaging felt, I don't know, it just didn't feel like my speakers anymore. And I don't like that. And I know you could push back and like, well, you just need to get used to this new image and then you'll put out a better end product. But it's like, I mean, I don't like the way it sounds, so I'm not going to get used to it. You know, one of the reasons why I like Barefoot's because I like the way Barefoot's sound. They have a characteristic to them, and they have incredible imaging and depth that I find really hard to, you know, to mimic in any other monitor that I've sat in front of. And I like having a 3D feel to work on. Some people don't like that. But I just feel like overall it's a lot of, you know, once again, it's a tool that people could use. There's probably plenty of people out there who are like, this has absolutely saved my life. Like, my work is better. I'm stoked about it. It sounds awesome. And that's fine. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong. If you like SonarWorks and you use it, keep using it. It's great. You know, it's just kind of like why, I don't know. I don't use any Slate stuff. Never have, never will probably. Just because I don't want to. I don't, like, I really don't have an issue with Slate. I just don't use it.
I mean, even though we gave him a hard time in episode one, yeah. I really, like, I love his stuff.
Right.
Like, there's one thing of his that is on every single master I do. So.
And that's terrific. I never used it. I've used it, but I was never like, oh, wow, I need Steven Slate stuff. But that's just me. So it, you know, I think anyone that's going to use SonarWorks, you have to go into it knowing it's not going to fix your lack of skill. You know, if you're not already making mixes or masters that you like, this will not like auto mix and master your stuff. Now it may give you a better chance to make an end product that you like that translates better, and I think for a lot of people it does do that. But I think in those cases, the people that really enjoy it, because I've talked to about probably three or four other people who have used it, the people that are in absolutely awful rooms seem to get the most benefit out of it. And that, I guess, is kind of interesting, and maybe that's the market is for them, is to appeal to people that, you know, may have next to no treatment, or they've just tossed monitors up on a desk. And there's like a literal desk, not like a console desk or anything. You know, with no stands or whatever. And for those people, it seems to be helping, and that's great. But I just found, you know, this isn't a solution for a professional to me. And I'm sure there's pros all over who would disagree with that. But my experience was, this isn't the solution to fixing your room. This isn't the solution for not using acoustic treatment. It's not the solution for not buying nice monitors that, you know, translate and respond more accurately to sound. And I think that note is something I want to speak on, because I did the headphone thing with the...
That's what I was going to get into next.
Yeah. So my quick experience, I just have a pair of the Sony, classic Sony, like, studio monitor. It says on the top of the, you know, the band or whatever. It's like the 7205 or 7506. Whoever's listening out there, I probably botched that number, so I apologize. But you've seen it, like, in every studio, probably, somewhere. It's these classic Sony cans. And the SonarWorks has the fix for it, or the, you know, the correction. And so I flipped it on, and immediately what I noticed, because these Sony cans I have, you can get them online for like, I think they're new for like $110 or something, and you can buy them used for like $80. So they're not like really expensive. They're not at all audiophile, you know, hi-fi, or they are kind of hi-fi, but they're not like audiophile grade or, to me, flat or accurate. But basically what I learned is I did just a few songs with headphones, and I immediately felt like, oh man, this is not very good. Like, it worked, but I'm still listening through really crummy headphones, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like the headphones aren't going to change with the way they react and push sound, you know, the speakers. Just like with the monitors. Like, if you had really crappy monitors and the SonarWorks thing corrected your room and now it says a flat, that doesn't mean those monitors just became like perfect, you know. They still will have the flaws that cheap monitors have, which is like,
you still have trash drivers.
Yeah, trashy drivers, distortion, you know, the woofers don't kick in until you're running at like 95 dB and then you're losing your hearing at that point, and then it's distorting at that point. And it's, you know, I just felt like with the headphone thing, it was like kind of helping, but at the same time, it was still the same crappy components that was pushing out a quote-unquote flat signal. But what I did find interesting with the headphone thing is when I would go to Spotify, I enjoyed listening to things with it on. Like on Spotify, like the way the Sony sound, I don't love the way they sound. I've just had them forever. But when I would flip the emulation on to like, you know, John Mayer or something, I felt like it sounded more like John Mayer. And so I found the listening experience, if I was not to work on them, like I may use the SonarWorks headphone thing strictly for listening if I only have crappy headphones, because I feel like it improves my experience for listening, but I felt like working on them, it was a nightmare. So that was my experience with the headphone thing. What do you think, Matt?
Well, and I suppose for the record, which would be a great name for a mastering chip business. you're not normally a headphone guy.
No, I'm not.
So like, you went into this already with a little bit of a bias.
Absolutely. I do not use headphones. I just don't. Oh, I hate it. The only time I use headphones is like listen to a podcast with my earbuds. And outside of that, I do not listen to music on headphones. I don't. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels weird to me. But that's me. I'm weird. There's plenty of people that are like, this guy's stupid. So...
And as for me, I don't mind headphones.
Right.
I get a little picky, and I've never really found a set of headphones that just like blows my mind. I mean, I even tried like the HD 800s by Sennheiser. I'm just like, I mean, this is cool and it sounds good, but I mean, I'm not paying this exorbitant amount of money for something that just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a prick. I don't know. But I like headphones, and
yeah.
I like the whole idea of them, and I like the result that you can get, and I love using them as a reference. And I mean, I have 3 points of reference whenever I master. I'll master in my room, and I'll listen in my room, and then I'll go. I have, like everybody else, my car, and to the point to where, if you want to know how crazy I am, I had one of those Volvos, one of those Volkswagen diesels that the U.S. government made VW buy back.
Yeah.
And, but I had been mastering and referencing with those speakers, so I went out and I bought a petrol version of the same car because I knew they had the same speakers. So my reference would never change.
Yeah.
Or at least I wouldn't have to learn a new car. So I bought the same car for this, for a very silly reason.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of how serious I take it. And then I go home, and then I have from my laptop to a headphone app, which I'm going to upgrade because I'm curious how that steps up. I think that's the next fun thing I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Just because I do like headphones, just so people do know, I'm going to invest the money into stuff. So I go from my laptop, because I typically build DDP at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, after everyone's gone to sleep. So I'll go from my laptop to my little headphone preamp to a pair of Beyerdynamic, the DT770s. The 250 ohm, if anybody cares. It's actually what I'm using right now to monitor my voice. So, and that's kind of like my final quality check. And if it passes all three of those, then we're good to go. And I know these headphones, like, the absolute back of, like, my hands, my feet. Like every, I know these things inside and out.
Yeah.
I know where they're good. I know where they're not good. And I think this is my second pair of them. So it's like, I'm going to keep buying them. Even though there's more expensive, like, Beyerdynamic headphones and stuff like that. If these break and I have an $1,100 pair of headphones, I'm going to still buy another pair of these just because I trust them that much.
Yeah.
Man, they should pay me for that endorsement.
There you go.
So just so people know, I do enjoy these headphones. So... in terms of what I thought, I'll get on to actually what other people thought. So the on Facebook, there are some mastering pages, and you have on gear slots and whatnot, and I'd be looking up what people thought about SonarWorks, and a bunch of people were asking and whatnot, and some people were like, I love the software, I couldn't live without it. The headphone thing is awesome. Other people are like, why don't you just treat your room correctly? You wouldn't have to worry about any of this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the whole barrage. But for the most part, people were like, I really like the headphone software. Really like the headphone software. Really. And it's like they would almost skip past the room calibration and say, I really like the headphone software.
Yeah.
And then they'd say whatever they had. And I would say that my sentiment is exactly the same, that I really do like the headphone software. I enjoyed listening to Spotify more with it, to work that I had done. I enjoyed listening to it more with that. And I actually mixed a whole album with the headphone calibration software. I will say the only downside that I found to it, and this might just be a limitation of my Beyerdynamics, is I had some spatial issues in that whenever I was listening to my Pro Axe again on mixes that I had mastered in my headphones, there were just some spatial tweaks. But besides that, I was actually completely happy.
Yeah.
And in terms of, like, hey, is it worth $99 for that? I would say every day of the week it's worth $99.
Mm-hmm.
Even on Black Friday when they're going to be running a sale, even on New Year's and Christmas when they're going to be running a sale, if you miss the sale, it's still worth $99. Yeah. I highly recommend it. And yeah, I have nothing but good things to say about it. There were a couple things that, I don't know, I was just like, kind of like what you were saying about, like, you could kind of hear some, like, a little bit more of the imperfection in your headphones whenever you were doing that. And I kind of felt the same way. And it's kind of funny. I have a pair of B&Ws that I use for just, like, a little hi-fi system that I have in my house. And I got them because when my wife and I had a kid, I didn't want him pulling the bookshelf speakers that I had at the time. I didn't want him pulling those over off the stands. So I got something he couldn't pull down and something he couldn't push over. So just a 600 series of B&W speakers, like nothing crazy, like under the sub 1,000. And I've always driven it with a 35 watt Yamaha amplifier from the 1970s, or I guess receiver. Well, back in the summer, I purchased, and because I've always been curious, but like, I'm 35 watts, these things can take a $125.
Yeah.
So back in the summer, I purchased a Class A amplifier that pushed, it was either 150 or 125, I can't remember. But when I heard it, I heard the detail and I heard everything that was being improved. And it's like, Class A is known for, like, they got flat amplifiers. Like, their amplifier is not going to get in the way of your music. I mean, that's why they're being used at Abbey Road and, I mean, like, hi-fi rooms and whatnot. I mean, that amplifier is not going to get in the way of anything. And I'll tell you, that amplifier did not get in the way of anything. So I'm running, now my speaker's full power, and I have never been more unhappy with how things sounded.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could just be because I'm picky, but, and I have a $2,500 amplifier powering these speakers, and just like, man, these speakers sound like shit. But it's because I'm actually hearing the components that were used to make this sub-$1,000, like, loudspeakers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I just took it, packed it back up, threw it up on eBay, sold it for a couple hundred more dollars than I bought it for, and plugged back in my 35-watt amplifier, and I've never been happier. So I feel like that's a little bit of the same sentiment, is to a degree, and it's where you should be a little cautious, to a degree, you might start hearing things you don't like, which may be because of the headphones that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
I will not say the same for the room calibration software. I think some other things are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who is on the fence, who has an appropriately treated room, who does have a little bit of an education in acoustics, whether that is self-taught or learned somewhere else, and they are happy with the results and everything translates, I will say that I do not believe that the room calibration software is the final 10%
mm-hmm.
to tighten everything up.
Yeah.
You might try like a Trenov software and the DSP and everything else that they use, but I mean, if you're going to drop however many thousands of dollars to make that work, go for it.
$3,000 to $4,000.
You can try that, but I don't think that SonarWorks, a $200 software, is the answer that you're looking for.
Yeah.
For those of you who are out there working in a bedroom and who have pretty bare walls and are just really experimenting and kind of dabbling, go ahead and try it.
Mm-hmm.
This might be something that might get you to 70% of the way. But I highly recommend doing a little bit of YouTube research and learning a bit about acoustic treatment, learning about diffusion, learning about deflection, learning about reflection, learning what's good and what's not. I mean, don't go and copy somebody's room just how it looks. I mean, you don't know what's behind the walls. You go treat something, a room in 100% rock wool, you're going to be pretty upset when, like, you're like, man, my ears feel fatigued. I kind of feel lost in the room, and it just kind of feels dead. And your results are going to show from that. But, like, actually learn where these little tiny, like, things come into play and how to use them. And then I think taking like a bedroom that's like a complete square,
mm-hmm.
like the worst acoustic like space, like a square is that, like if you have like a 8x8x8, I mean, that's kind of as bad as you're going to get.
Yeah.
That might take you a little bit further. That might get you to 70 or so percent, and it might treat that. I can't speak into what happens then when you have a subwoofer. But I mean, who knows? I know that my $4,000 sub on the floor isn't really reading stuff, and I don't think it's EQing itself incorrectly
mm-hmm.
to where it's going to need a 12 dB cut.
Yeah.
So, and when all of my stuff, especially the low end, is translating pretty tight out of the room. So As far as the room calibration software, I'd say spend $200 somewhere else. As far as the headphone calibration, I would say if you like listening to headphones, or even if you're on the fence, I mean, it's $100. Give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask nice, they might give you a discount code. Or if you search around, they might give you a discount code. The one thing that I did not appreciate, though, and the one thing that I found a little bit disrespectful, because this was going to be an honest review, it would probably have been a little bit nicer of a review, too, is I still wanted to do... Like, I reached out to these people. I wanted to do the episode with them.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad findings.
Right.
Because all you see is good. All you see is people, like, lauding over, like, how great this is. Man, this really, like, this solved my marriage. Like, it's like, just, like, come on. So, they reach out to us after the month, and we say, yeah, we're good. Can we talk a little bit more about this and, like, our findings and everything else? And I send them exactly what I have told every one of you in the past 53 minutes. And I sent them a response, or they followed up on October 3rd. And I sent them something on October 6th because I suck at email. If anybody emails in, I'm about to switch it just to Sam's email, so it goes to him, because I am terrible at email. And then on October 6th, I responded, so 3 days later. It might have been like a weekend or something. And then October 17th, I followed back up and said, hey, just wanted to follow up about the Sonar Works episode if y'all were still interested. So we were ghosted.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have positive stuff. And even though we were like, hey, can you provide a text? So like, not like you can defend yourself, but can you provide someone so that like you can help like sell your product? Like, we want to do this thing. Like, hey, like, you have no problem giving out discount codes. Let's go ahead and like, you can do stuff for Black Friday and like, we'll promo it and we'll like,
yeah,
like, this is a thing. So I own a company. I own two companies, I guess, the mastering and the other one. I don't like being ghosted. And I take my business pretty seriously. And I think that is very unprofessional of a company to do. At least respond and say, in all honesty, we'd be more than happy to answer these questions off the air. But in terms of the episode, we're not going to follow through with that.
Mm-hmm.
But to ghost people, that kind of burned the bridge with me. So, but I still like the headphone calibration software, so still do that. But in terms of treating people, that was dirty. That was dirty.
Yeah, that wasn't very nice.
It was, like a really unprofessional way to like end something that it's like, I want to try to help sell this. And I think if nothing else, we can try to sell, like at least really stand behind one part and at least be like, hey, make your own decision for the room calibration software.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're not getting anything. We wouldn't get any money from it. We just wanted to do a follow-up episode because so many people were interested in the room acoustics episode.
Right.
But here's our follow-up.
Here it is.
It's kind of a weird way to end season one, but I mean, that's our findings. And I mean, we'd love to hear everybody's response. I know like there's a ton of people out there, at least via Instagram, that seem to love it.
Mm-hmm.
So please let us know what you think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us we're wrong. So, you got anything else, Sam?
Let's see. I mean, maybe just one thing to end on would be,
yeah,
nothing will fix your room better than actually treating it correctly. You know, mm-hmm. if there was the one thing I feel like I really took away after using it for a couple months is I was just like, man, I am grateful I have spent the money hiring a professional to come do my room. Because it sounds better than anything the Sonar Works thing can do. And also my stuff just sounds terrific. It does. I know it does. So I would just say, and it didn't used to, and I know a big factor for me of improving my work for my clients And also, the other thing, too, is the amount of time I save. Once I started paying someone to come tune my room and continually check it out and tweak it and try stuff out, I began to save so much time in my work because the decisions I kept making were actually the correct ones because I was hearing everything correctly. And so I guess for those listening, like, I would highly encourage you to seek out someone. And I know I kind of have the luxury of being in Nashville. So, like, there's people who do this for a living here. But I would highly encourage you to seek out someone, or even, like, you can learn this stuff. People learn this. And, like, you can tune your own room. Like, you could buy an RTA mic, buy the software, read some manuals, and just start playing around with your own room and treatment. And that's probably realistically, like, that's something I'm going to start doing because it just helps me understand sound better and the way things work. And that then, you know, helps me give a better end product to my clients. So I would just say for people that are listening, like, the SonarWorks thing, you know, it's a tool, it can be used, it can be beneficial. But I promise you, if you ever have the chance or the ability to actually get your room treated properly and set up and tuned by a professional, you will absolutely love it way beyond throwing a EQ, you know, curve on your on your computer. So that's what I just wanted to reiterate, like, tangible action moves for people. Check out the software if you want, like Matt was talking about, but then also, I think long-term goal, if you're serious about this, like, hire someone to do your room, and I promise you, you're going to enjoy that way more than just throwing an EQ curve on everything you do. So, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, man. I mean, even if you don't have the resources to hire somebody, or even if there's nobody in your area that does that professionally, I mean, everybody's learning everything online.
Yes.
Like, forums are kind of nasty. So I'd kind of keep, like, little non-professional advice. I'd keep your questions to a minimum just because it's like people are, like high-nosing around there or high-browing, whatever you call it. But I mean, if you just go on YouTube and you go on, like, these forums and you just kind of dig around and you just look and you, like, figure out how to navigate things, you'll find these answers. I mean, you're not the first person to ask these questions.
Right.
So, like, go on, like, Google room mode calculator and you can pull, and you can enter the exact dimensions of your room. It'll show you exactly and mathematically what is wrong in your room and what frequencies you should probably look out for. So it's like, this is actually very easy to do on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to invest the time and be like, oh, okay, acoustics really like symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And these panels are not symmetrical. And these speakers are not symmetrical.
Yeah.
And they're sitting on my desk. And it's like, I'm working with three people right now and setting up one's setting up a home listening environment, and I think he's going to end up doing mixing. And the other two are home studios. And I put everybody on a couple phases, and everyone has their speakers on their desk. And it's like, okay, phase one, we need to get these puppies on speaker stands. Mm-hmm. And then we need to isolate them from the speaker stands. And then, like, let's put a plan together for your room. And it's like, It's not rocket science, but you just have to know stuff, and you can learn this all online, and you can learn it by asking people privately if they're giving out information freely, which it seems like a lot of people are these days. It's not too difficult to reach out to them and say, "Hey, would you mind me asking you a couple things about like room acoustics?" And normally, if someone's giving out information pretty regularly, they'll have no problem doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it seems like all these people want to do is help. So, I mean, I would take them up on their kindness. So, oh, that's all I got to say. So even if you don't have a professional, you can definitely teach yourself.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't have a professional, and I treated the whole front of my room with rock wool, and I was like, how come I can't hear any reverb tails? This is weird. And I was like, oh, the front of the room's too dead.
Yeah.
So I built a 200-pound diffuser, and I hung it on the wall.
Yeah.
And then you just go about it, and you just learn it, and you figure it out, and you ask a bunch of people. And it's not rocket science. It's just that actually a lot of people just aren't giving out the information too readily.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. I think that's kind of all I have to say. I feel like this is just gonna be me repeating myself.
It's always good. We're forgetful people.
Yeah, definitely. But I'd say this has been a solid first year of recording, Sam.
Absolutely. I feel so grateful and blessed that people are listening and that we get to do this. It is just, it's such a gift. So thank you everyone who's listening, and we'll be back with season two.
We'll be back with season two. And if everything goes to plan, season two will start on January 2nd of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, which is November of 2018, we are at 26,256 downloads in 1 year, which is like a couple days away from being 10 months that we've been live.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah. So if, obviously that is you, I was going to say, if that is you who's listening, it's like, which obviously would be, thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
We cannot overstate that gratitude. I mean, it, like, even looking at like the heat maps from like around the world, it is insane. And it's like there's very few spots where like someone is not tuning in. And the same goes for even like our country, the US. Just there's very few people who have not, like, very few states that like do not like just light up with people who are listening. And everyone's like writing in, and we're getting feedback, whether that's good or bad. I mean, it all just helps cater the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's something you like, if there's something you don't, please feel free to reach out. We are eternally grateful for that. If everything goes to plan, and if it doesn't, we'll probably just edit this part out. If everything goes to plan, there should be a merch website that is currently up that has a couple cool offerings for everybody. I highly recommend checking that out. We'll probably be plugging the episodes leading up until this episode, probably in the beginning, to let people know that, hey, if you want something from the Attack and Release show and to support us a little bit, then, and like, it's not just crap. It's like, it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool stuff.
It's cool.
So we hope you like it. If not, I guess we'll know. So anywho, thank you all so much for listening. Sam, you have anything left for the people of podcast land to close out season one?
I think I'll let you do the honors of saying what you need to say.
What kind of music do you think we'll close out with? Like some, like sleigh bells?
Yeah, we're going to do Christmas.
We're going to do Christmas?
That's what I was planning on doing.
Is there any like rap Christmas jingle bell stuff?
You know, I'm sure there is, and I'm sure I could make something.
I don't know. Something obnoxious.
I got my work cut out for me.
Something obnoxious but festive.
I'll figure it out.
I can't wait. All right. See y'all in season two.
Whatever you're having.
Oh, shit.
Come on, yeah. Man.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. All right. Morning, afternoon, night. Whatever y'all are having, have a darn good one. See y'all in season two.
Bye. Am I gonna cue the music?
Oh yeah, cue the music, Sam.
You can tell we need to be done with season one here.
Season one's been a long season.
Cueing.
See ya. Oh, Merry Christmas, everyone.